This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, the Canadian Federation of Agriculture hosted a national agriculture leaders debate last night in advance of the September 20th federal election. I will have some comments from the candidates coming up on today's program. As well, wheat and canola markets have taken a big drop this week. PI Financial Commodity Futures Advisor Adam Pacallo joins us on the program. A market analyst says fewer yellow peas will be sold to China in the coming year as U.S. companies pay higher prices for a drought-reduced North American crop. We will hear from Chuck Penner with Left Field Commodity Research on that. So all of those stories and much more coming up on today's edition of GX in Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Sean Prohitka, your RE/MAX Blue Chip Realty Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. And Phil, we have some thin cloud over us right now. What can we expect for conditions for the rest of the day?
Well, it would likely be in and out of that cloud for quite a bit of the time. A little bit of thicker cloud to the north that's trying to drop in. As it does so, likely a few hours away from most of us, a couple of showers pass through. We'll say 1, 2 o'clock, starting to get into some of those showers. Even depending on how much this expands, it likely expands a bit. Right now it's a pretty thin line, but likely expands a bit as it drops through, so maybe as late as 3 o'clock. But through the afternoon, that'll be it, and then by later afternoon, evening, we're back into a clearing sky. Temperature 21, the cloud cover that's in place is not necessarily stopping the warming, but the combination of the general overcast and the northerly wind limiting it. Some of us may get a little warmer, a little sunshine breaks through. There are some breaks in the overcast, and not really much of a block. That the wind certainly working against the warming a bit, but overall the atmosphere does have potential to warm, so some of us will get warmer, 24, even 25, but on average just barely above 20 this afternoon. The wind is up. It's gusting as high as 40 kilometers per hour this afternoon. Clearing sky tonight, and will drop off pretty quickly as the wind settles down. We're down to around 5. Tomorrow, sunshine starts the day. Cloudiness will mix back in through the afternoon, the high 20, and we're mostly cloudy for Saturday night and Sunday. So the cloud cover, not likely to produce any precipitation, may get pretty gray for a while, but showers should hold off until Sunday night. Temperature, though, under that cloud cover, only 17 on Sunday after an overnight low 7. Monday, a couple of showers. The best chance for the showers coming in during the late night and then early morning hours, but continuing through the afternoon on Monday, the showers will still be coming through. They'll linger a bit, and then they'll taper off by Monday night. 18 is the high on Monday. Cloud cover clears out to sunshine Tuesday with a high near 20.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour. The Paw is at 19 degrees. Swan River and Roblin, 20. Dauphin, 25. Brandon, 26. Shoal Lake Russell, 23. Regina is at 21. Saskatoon, 18. Hudson Bay, 16. Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, 22, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, 15. The Yorkton-Melville region has a partly sunny sky, a north-northwest wind at 18, gusting to 32 kilometers an hour. 54% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 20 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of 26 degrees and dropped to a low of 11 degrees. There was no precipitation recorded in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is 17 degrees. The normal low is 5 degrees. The sun rose in Yorkton at 6:17 this morning, and it will set at 7:16 tonight. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hot spot was Melitta at 28 degrees. The cold spot was Thompson at plus 4 degrees. The Saskatchewan hotspot yesterday was Valmarie at 31 degrees. The cold spot was Valmarie as well at plus 4 degrees. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return in 90 seconds time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. The Canadian Federation of Agriculture hosted a National Agriculture Leaders Debate last night in advance of the September 20th federal election. Candidates from the Liberal, Conservative, NDP, and Bloc Québécois parties took part. However, since the Bloc Québécois doesn't run candidates outside of Quebec, I won't be including their comments today. The first topic was about how the agricultural policy framework can be improved in 2023. The Liberals' Marie-Claude Bibeau provided this response.
Well, I've been working with my provincial colleagues for 2 years and a half. We've been meeting almost every week during COVID to make sure that we were collaborating to improve the programs and to put in place the best programs for our farmers. And we've been able to reach a consensus together to increase agri-stability by $95 million per year already by removing the reference margin limit, which was a big deal, because this was the cause of a long process. It was unfair for a different sector. And now I'm very proud that we made this happen already. We have also another proposal on the table to increase the compensation rate from 70 to 80%. And we are waiting for the conservative provincial governments to join to make it happen. But looking forward, I'm in the process with my provincial colleagues to improve the business risk management programs and to also introduce the notion of climate risk, because the world is changing faster than we would have thought. And this is important to make sure that our business risk management programs meet this new reality.
Dave Epp represented the Conservative Party.
When I talk to our farm community, when I talk to the industry that they serve and is served by them, what I keep hearing is that they experience the attitude of an Ottawa knows best. What they're not experiencing is a true partnership. And that, I guess, is the attitude that a Conservative government would bring. As has been mentioned, we need to review our business risk management programming. We need to review our regulatory framework, not throw it away. We're known for that, but we need to make it far more efficient, because not only in agriculture, but in other parts of our economy, we have fantastic innovators here, but they're commercialized elsewhere. We just, as an ag committee, finished our ag processing capacity study. Too much of our product is exported in a raw state. We need far more collaboration amongst government, amongst industry, amongst our provinces to add more value here at home. And a Conservative government would bring that collaborative attitude to this industry.
Alistair McGregor took part on behalf of the NDP.
I think the next agricultural policy framework really needs to be built around the theme of resiliency. This is used repeatedly at committee, and I've questioned many of our producers about. The last 18 months have really exposed a lot of cracks in the system. And, you know, I agree that we don't want an Ottawa knows best approach, but we do want a strong federal leadership in many areas. We know that this next century, climate change is going to be a huge factor. And in fact, many of our farmers are now repeatedly telling us that they are on the front lines of climate change. So the next agricultural policy framework in discussion with the provinces is really going to have to center on how we manage the risk from climate change, what it's going to really do to our producers. How can we build resiliency into local processing centers to make sure that communities have access to locally grown food? These are all big themes that have to be centered on in terms of resiliency.
The second debate topic centered around drought assistance. First up was Marie-Claude Bibeau of the Liberals.
Well, we have already spoken about the business risk management programs, and I think these programs can be improved and take into consideration climate risk. And this is exactly the conversation that has already started with my provincial colleagues and with the industry, of course. But in addition to that, we have to be proactive, and we have to support our farmers to be more resilient to this new reality. This is why we are putting in place a $200 million program to give farmers incentives to adopt better management practices like rotational grazing, like cover cropping, like better management of the nutrient. And we will triple the investment into the clean tech programs because it was so popular a few months ago that we will triple the investment to reach almost $500 million to help farmers afford energy efficient equipment, for example, to grain for grain dryers, farm heating, or precision agriculture, for example. And we have other programs in mind to give us to incentivize the and more.
Then Dave Epp of the Conservative spoke.
The review of the business risk management program was promised by this government, and it's still not done. So what we have in place right now is agri-recovery. The province has stepped forward. Yes, the provincial, the federal government put forward a small amount of money, nowhere near to the disaster that our Western colleagues are facing. And so it was, again, leadership from the provinces that finally was matched at the 11th hour. What about the tax? I mean, right now there is livestock starving or livestock herds being dispersed. What about the livestock tax deferral? Right now, I'm aware of in Ontario 40,000 bales of hay waiting for some federal help on transportation to get to those needing that. Where is that leadership from the federal government?
And finally, Alistair McGregor of the NDP.
Yes, absolutely. More help is going to be needed, not only for what's happened this year, but in future years. I mean, it's very important for us to understand this is now going to be a long-term trend, and we are going to see more and more of these extreme weather events. So if we don't start changing the policy to seriously confront climate change, our farmers are going to continue to see these effects. And we have to ask ourselves as a country, how many more future tax dollars are we prepared to spend to mitigate against the effects of climate change before we understand that the smart money is to make those critical investments now? I think one of the important things that we can do is to help farmers, you know, give them that support in better soil management techniques, because we know that healthier soils are better able to withstand droughts and floods. It's one of the reasons why I was proud to introduce a private member's bill to try and establish a national soil conservation strategy. It's going to require a lot of different things coming together, but action is definitely needed because this problem is only going to get worse.
The third topic of the debate was value-added agriculture and food processing support. First up was Dave Epp of the Conservatives.
One of the threats, the largest, that's hard to pick. There are several here challenges. Labor is certainly one of them. Labor both at the farm level, but at our grocery level, they are having very difficult attracting enough labor. But in the meat cutting sector is one that's part of our platform to address that as well. Just the supply, the value chain relationships, particularly between our retail sector and our processors. The Conservatives pushed this government to introduce a grocery code of conduct to address some of the abuses in that industry. So that is, again, to bring some stability and predictability to those relationships will certainly increase the comfort to invest in Canada by our further processors and our food manufacturers.
Then Alistair McGregor of the NDP.
I would encourage anyone who hasn't already to take a look at the committee report from the Standing Committee on Agriculture and Agri-Food, because our report on processing capacity in Canada, I think, was very comprehensive and displayed a great partnership amongst all the parties. But we feel that that report very accurately reflected what people on the ground were feeling. And COVID-19 really did expose some weaknesses in our supply chains. So going back to that theme of resiliency, I think you know, one of the biggest threats is, particularly with meat processing, is in many cases we have put all of our eggs in one basket. And so when, you know, in the future, if those processing facilities are threatened or shut down, suddenly many of our primary producers are left on the hook with tremendous backlogs. So the way we have to counteract this threat is we have to make sure that processing capacity is expanded and diversified so that local communities have access to those value-added processing facilities and can get more money on the products that they make.
And finally, Marie-Claude Bibeau of the Liberals.
Well, labor shortage is definitely a very big issue right now. This is the thing that I hear the most about in the field. And we do have a full strategy to face it. First, around the temporary foreign worker, we are on our way to proceed, and we are committed to do this modernization and reform of our temporary foreign workers program. First thing, to recognize the trusted partners, the trusted employers, which are the most, you know, most of our farmers are very good employers, and we want to make it more easier and more predictable for them to hire these foreign temporary workers. We want to reduce the red tape, and we want also to increase the mobility, because this is something that has been asked from both the employers and the workers. Processing is another important issue. I agree, we have to strengthen our regional food supply chain and to support innovation within.
That was the first three topics covered by last night's Federal Agriculture Leaders Debate. I will cover the last three questions, hopefully a little later on in the program. It's time now for the Ag Review portion of our program, and that's a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX94, Ag Review.
The Canola Council of Canada has named Chris Davison as Vice President of Stakeholder and Industry Relations, and Troy Sherman as Director of Government Relations, both based in Ottawa. Davison joins the Canola Council from Syngenta, where he was based at Washington, D.C., as Head of Business Sustainability for North America. He has more than 25 years of experience in the agriculture sector, including work in the areas of public and regulatory affairs and government relations. Sherman joins the Canola Council from Strategy Corps, a leading government and public affairs consultancy in Ottawa, where he led client accounts providing advice and support on a wide range of government relations issues. Previously, he was the manager of policy at the Canadian Produce Marketing Association and a policy advisor to an Ottawa city councillor. Great Lakes Grain's annual crop assessment tour has wrapped up for the year and included over 500 corn fields and nearly 400 soybean fields. Reports from the tour suggest that the Ontario corn crop is shaping up to be a new provincial record. Early planting and less stress than past years means the corn crop is in fine shape heading into the dry down phase. It was also noted that the crop is advancing quickly and earlier than average. Those assessing the corn crop say that top yield potential exists because of strong plant populations, thick cobs, and longer row of kernels compared to last year and past years. April planted corn has black layered already, denoting physiological maturity, and some experts are still not entirely sure why the corn crop is as advanced as it is, though others suggest warm nights may have driven advancement of the crop. This year's data suggests that over 75% of the corn fields are in the dense stage now, compared to 54% in the 2020 crop and only 18% in the 2019 crop on or around the same date. Soybean yields are not expected to be as impressive. However, given some of the adversity the crop faced this year, those on the tour were surprised by how positive some areas look. Still, white mold, sudden death syndrome, and frog eye leaf spot were easily found in fields. The European Parliament's Agriculture Committee has approved a deal to overhaul the European Union's huge farming subsidies, including new measures aimed at making agriculture greener. The committee approved three pieces of legislation, which from 2023 will govern spending from the EU's Common Agricultural Policy, a scheme that will spend 387 billion euros, or about $579 billion Canadian, from the EU's 2021 to 2027 budget on payments to farmers and rural development. The rules are the result of a three-year battle between EU countries and lawmakers over how to make the policy greener, which ended when negotiators agreed to a deal on reforms in June. The committee approved the rules with a comfortable majority, but green lawmakers rejected the proposal, saying they failed to align agriculture with EU climate change targets. The full EU Parliament will vote on the rules later this year. Member states' ministers must then formally approve them. The EU is overhauling its policies across all sectors to cut greenhouse gas emissions causing climate change. Agriculture produces around 10% of EU emissions, and the new farming policy will attempt to shift subsidies from environmentally damaging intensive farming practices to protecting nature. And that's the AgriView portion of our program. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return right after these messages.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for October closed at 123.42 today. That's down 32. December live cattle closed at 128.22, down 57. October feeder cattle closed at 157.72, down 152. November feeder cattle closed at 159.12, down 210. October lean hogs closed at 82.45, down 302. December lean hogs closed at 76.10, down 337. And that's the livestock market conditions. Well, wheat and canola markets have taken a big drop this week. PI Financial Commodity Futures Advisor Adam Piccolo says canola is down $35 per metric ton, and spring wheat has declined 47 cents a bushel this week.
Starting off on canola, November canola is down about $35 a ton here this week. Again, short trading week with Monday, that was the holiday. Now since August 27th, November canola is down about $62 a ton. So a decent drop in that market. Minneapolis wheat down as well too, about 47 cents a bushel here this week alone. So that drop largely happened from yesterday. And today we are recovering a little bit now. Minneapolis wheat is up about 4.25 cents, sitting at 8.76¾ as we're talking here. I have 8.60 as a level. I do want to see Minneapolis wheat hold, which it has been doing that here for some time. So one thing I am going to be watching is for that level to be holding kind of for next week. StatsCan does come out for a model-based crop production report on next week, actually on Tuesday. So that's definitely something to keep in mind. Today, however, there was a USDA report that could have been a market mover. When it came to soybeans and corn, those are the main two crops. Corn and soybean yields for the U.S. came in just a little bit above trade expectations, though not by much. So there weren't really any surprises there. Ending stocks in the U.S. for corn and soybeans are higher than last month's estimates, but again, pretty close to trade estimates. Now, the one thing that happened actually was the USDA reduced Brazil's corn crop by about 1 million tons. So that's kind of, we are seeing beans up here today, 15 cents, and corn here up 3 cents right now, mid-morning. So that's kind of helping support some of these other grains. And right now, again, canola is up about $7 a ton, sitting at $860 on the November contract.
So what pushed canola and wheat prices down this week, and what's the outlook for next week?
Well, a few different things that I've been watching. I think the first thing is that Canadian wheat production did come out from StatsCan higher than expected on their last report. So I think that was kind of a bit of a negative, bit of a surprise. However, I don't believe that wheat is going to stay at these levels. I think it can continue the positive trend higher. However, that's where I always like to have both I would say, targets at the lower end and the higher end that I watch. Because, you know what, you need to be unemotional. If it goes down to that lower end, you might be wrong and you have to reevaluate. So I'm going to be watching kind of Minneapolis wheat here from that fundamental side, and as well as the technical side, because I think there has been some technical selling here on a lot of the grains, just whether it's harvest pressure or, you know, I've been talking to a lot of producers and things have turned out to be, you know, a little bit better than expected. So the market is always forward looking that way. So before, for canola and wheat, it was pricing in, you know, at that rally to keep continuing, you know, through harvest. Well, when things turned out a little bit better, you know, that's when things has softened a little bit. So that's one thing. And then on the canola front, one definite factor has been soybean oil declining here. So soybean oil has been pushing lower, dragging canola down a little bit too. So for the canola front here, again, that's been a pretty big drop that we've seen. We've not seen kind of this price here since really back in kind of early August on the futures. So some important levels to be holding here.
Adam Pacallo is a commodity futures advisor with PI Financial in Regina. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return in 90 seconds time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. It's partly sunny and 20 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. A market analyst says fewer yellow peas will be sold to China in the coming year as U.S. companies pay higher prices for a drought-reduced North American crop. Chuck Penner with Left Field Commodity Research provided the pea market outlook yesterday at the Canadian Pulse and Special Crops Conference. In the 2020-21 crop year, China purchased nearly 3 million metric tons of yellow peas from Canada, which accounted for 72% of our total exports. Some of those peas were used in fractionation for the human food market, and some went for feed. Penner believes the current high pea price will change Chinese buying patterns.
The key question, of course, and I've had lots of discussions with people, is how much of that Chinese pea demand was simply coming from the feed sector. And that's where we'll probably see the softness in Chinese demand going forward, is fewer pea imports in terms of for their feed market. The remainder would be their fractionation market. My rough guess would be is that somewhere in the ballpark of 1.3, 1.5 million tons would be their fractionation market.
This is not a big concern for Canada, because 2021 pea production is expected to be about 2.5 million metric tons, or 2 million metric tons lower than last year. U.S. pea production was also hit by drought, and American buyers are looking to secure North American supplies.
It's going to be a very, very strong market going into 2022, and I would suspect that buyers are going to be trying to be more aggressive earlier with higher bids. But based on this year's experiences, farmers are going to be very, very reluctant to forward contract much, if at all, especially if the moisture situation doesn't start to look a little better as we go into the winter and looking ahead to next spring.
Penner takes a look at current prices for yellow and green peas.
What we have is individual bids in the north of $16 a bushel for yellow peas, some cases 17 or even a bit higher. So we are, frankly, at record levels for yellow pea prices. That's the environment that we're in right now. It's like a number of other crops that we have going on, or the situation in a number of other crops this year, is that farmers simply are not selling. They may not have the product, so they can't, or they're just watching this market go higher and letting it go, or they're figuring out how much they have available to sell. So the question is, where does that demand start to get rationed based on those high prices? In terms of green peas, prices have been higher. We have seen some extreme highs in 2011 and 12, where we had prices close to $18 a bushel, but we're really heading in that direction, and the momentum is taking us there already. So that's the kind of environment, price environment that we have. And the situation is the same in the U.S. In fact, bids, average bid, posted bids in the U.S. from U.S. elevators are even higher. And so that's where the extreme buying is coming from right now.
Chuck Penner is with Left Field Commodity Research. He provided the pea market outlook yesterday at the Canadian Pulse and Special Crops Conference. Penner's presentation was followed by a marketer's panel. We will hear some of those comments next.
Commodities Update.
November canola, and in fact all of the canola futures, closed up across the board today. November canola closed at $853.70, up $1 per metric ton. January canola closed at $843.80, up $1.10. December Minneapolis wheat closed at $878.75. That's up 6.25 cents. December Kansas City wheat closed at $682.50, down 0.25 cent. December Chicago wheat closed at $688.50, down 3.75 cents. December corn closed at $517.50, up 7.5 cents. November soybeans closed at $1,286.50, up 16 cents. And December oats closed at $4.93 per bushel, up 5.5 cents. And that's the commodities update. Canadian yellow pea production is expected to drop 42% this year, with green peas down 58%. Yesterday, the Saskatchewan Agriculture Crop Report estimated the average pea yield at only 21 bushels an acre. Jeff Vipond is the general manager of pulses and seed and milling with Schooler Canada. He believes pea production may be hard-pressed to hit 2.5 million metric tons, which would be a couple of million metric tons less than last year.
There's potential for some downward movement, I think, in that production number. I think that, you know, 2.5 to 2.6 that we've been talking about between Chuck's number and StatsCan, I think that's kind of the top end in my mind of where we're going to end up. I think the other thing that's out there that isn't getting a lot of traction is maybe the quality of that crop that is produced there. When we look at green peas and how they reacted to the heat and the sun stress that they received and some of those late rains that we got at harvest too. So it just adds more challenge to that reduced supply side.
Vipond indicates there's a lot of buyer interest in Canadian peas south of the border.
Yeah, I think we've seen that domestic usage south of the border continue to increase over the past few years. I know we ran into a bit of some challenges around pulse inclusion in pet food, but we seem to have seen a rebound in that. And, you know, Chuck talks about a 450,000 ton import requirement into the United States. I think we're going to be all of that. If you asked me to peg a number on it, I think we'd be north of 500,000 tons, which at that point you're kind of splitting hairs. But I think, you know, the rumors of what's already been booked, some of the demand that's out there between the pet food buyers and some of the food fractionation companies, I think the U.S. marketplace is going to need all of that. And I view the majority of that, just given logistical challenges and everything else around the globe, that it is going to come out of this Canadian marketplace.
Higher pea prices will reduce the volume of peas sold to China. Kevin Price is a senior export trader with Parrish and Heimbecker.
You know, based on our current S&D, I mean, we're going to be pretty tight. We're going to be, you know, essentially zero carryover again and run out of peas by spring. So I will bet that China eventually will have to pony up and come to the table. But we're testing the reality of what we consider core demand. I mean, once the prices get to a certain level, like, what is core demand? A lot of comments about, oh, we're going to buy Aussie dun peas or other substitutes, you know, corn for pigeon feed, corn for other food usage. So we're going to start to see substitution happen as the prices, you know, ratchet up over there. So that core demand number, 1.3, 1.4, that actually could be a couple hundred thousand tons lower than that, face of these sort of record high prices that they're facing.
There will be a lot of competition for acres in 2022, with all commodities offering attractive prices. However, based on what happened this year, producers could be reluctant to make contract commitments in advance. This is Jeff Vipond once again from Schooler Canada.
I think that's the million-dollar question for all of us. It's going to be an acreage battle. Chuck mentioned it in his presentation about the fight between canola and durum and pulses to maintain or increase. Well, obviously, several of those commodities have a need to increase acres, and I think we're going to be challenged to see growth over this year how far we could retract on pulse acres. I don't know if we lose 5-10%, but I think we're going to be challenged to replicate the type of acreage base we had at the start of the 2021 growing season.
These comments were made yesterday during a panel discussion at the Canadian Pulse and Special Crops Conference. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will be back in 60 seconds' time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. The East Central Research Foundation near Yorkton is conducting a study on flax desiccation. Research assistant Heather Sorstad has the details.
This is the second year for our flax desiccant study, which is being conducted at Yorkton, Indian Head, and Swift Current. The trial was designed by Chris Hazoffel at IHARF with technical support by the Saskatchewan Flax Development Commission. All desiccants in this study were applied at the 75% brown boll stage. As indicated by the relative stem moisture content at harvest, Reglone alone provided the best dry down of the crop, followed by Roundup Plus Heat and Roundup alone. But remember, Reglone alone does not provide long-term control of perennial weeds. You can get around this by applying Roundup a few days before applying Reglone, but this gets pricey. Roundup Plus Heat followed by Roundup alone were the next best options for dry down, and these options also provide perennial weed control. But even Roundup alone made a difference in dry down during the drought year at Yorkton, because the flax is trying to regrow after rains were received in late season. Unfortunately, not all end users will accept flax treated with desiccants, so be aware of the latest restrictions before using any of these products. More information is available from SAS Flax.
Heather Sorstad is the research assistant at the East Central Research Foundation near Yorkton. It's time now for your agriculture weather, and that's a presentation of Ducks Unlimited. The GX94 Precision Weather Forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. Partly sunny with a 30% chance of showers, winds north-northwest at 20 to 35 and gusty at times, a high of 21 degrees. For tonight, clear, winds north-northwest at 10 to 20, and a low of 5. Tomorrow, partly to mainly sunny, winds north-northwest at 15 to 25, a high of 20. Sunday, partly to mainly cloudy, winds south-southeast at 15 to 25, and a high of 17. For Monday, a 30% chance of isolated showers, a high of 18, and Tuesday, early cloud, then clearing, a high of 20. In the Paw, it's 19 degrees. Swan River and Roblin are at 20. Dauphin, 25. Brandon, 26. Show Lake Russell, 23. Regina is at 21. Saskatoon, 18. Hudson Bay, 16. Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, 22. Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, 15. The Yorkton-Melville region has a partly sunny sky, a north-northwest wind at 18, gusting to 32 kilometers per hour. 54% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 20 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again on Monday at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.
CJGX, serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX94.